Chicago has long been the place people come to make something of themselves before moving elsewhere. Students, immigrants, and artists all come to the Windy City to work on their craft, and when they're ready, they move on, just like Oprah.
For many, it's a bittersweet goodbye to the city that supported them. But for comedian Eric Barry, his farewell wasn't so fond. He thinks the second city is shitty, so he penned a piece saying goodbye to Chicago about his terrible experience living here. What he didn't expect was that so many folks would put him on blast, including us.
Joining us today is comedian and copywriter Eric Clements to talk about the uproar the Chicago breakup letter is causing and why folks are eagerly rushing to defend the city known as the hog butcher to the world.
Plus, a mom in South Carolina claims to have invented a bug spray that will attract any Bigfoot within a mile and a half.
Why did boys used to swim naked in high school?
And arrivederci Cassini, the space probe studying Saturn, gets an operatic finale from a Star Trek crew member.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. You think cooking and drag queens don't mix? They do if it's Feast of Fun. You see, we have that special way of capturing flavor. Deep brewed flavor for that awesome taste. Check it out, cookingwithdragqueens.com. It's been a while since we had comedian and copywriter Eric Paul Clemens, a gorgeous young man who lives right next door to us, who also works out at the same gym as we do. Now, Eric was being stalked by a big-dicked man in the locker room, and you came on our podcast sort of like a very cock-confused Jimmy Stewart, and you were like, there was a penis over there. It was big, and it was large, and it was pointing at me.
That's right.
How you doing? Welcome back.
I'm great. I'm awesome. I haven't seen the guy in a long time.
I think he moved out of town.
He left the gym, right?
I think he got kicked out. He's off to other gyms.
Everybody
now.
Would always talked about him because they were like, you know, he was a good looking guy, but he also had a big member.
Well, I just remember. And, oh, go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say back. It was funny because back then when I first told you about it,
I saw it,
and you're like, it's not that big, and I'm like, I think it's pretty big.
Not only like that, but I was funny about it because I was like, oh, it's not that big. And you were like, you were angry. You were like, you've seen the same porn I've seen. You've seen the same dicks I've seen. And you know that's a big dick.
That's a porn,
and you
know it was what? A porn dick.
It was a big dick. Yeah. It was.
Now,
to
clarify for people who are not familiar, you can listen to their original show, show 1919 for you plus members, Smoking in the Boys' Rooms.
Yes.
And that's on our website, feastoffun.com, so premium subscribers can listen to that podcast and hear Eric. You were quite distressed by the experience initially.
Well, I was. I mean, I wanted to treat the guy with respect. I mean, I'm sure if I was maybe a different person, and I'm a straight man, if I wasn't, maybe it would be
If you were a straight man?
If I wasn't a straight man, it might be something that I would, be into. So I was trying to, you know, give him my, the nonverbal cues with, okay, I'm not really digging this and blah, blah, blah.
And let me clarify something here.
Sure.
You are a cisgendered heterosexual man, happily in love with your girlfriend,
That's
Molly.
Right. That's right.
And you have no hateful bones in your heart. And so you wanted to make sure to politely decline the amorous advances of this gentleman admirer of yours.
Yes, yes.
Because it got to this stalking area, right? Because it was like following you into the locker room, like trying to like here it is. Do you like how big it is?
Yeah. I mean, it felt good to be, you know, liked still.
wait. You have to pause between you say that.
It felt good. to be liked.
Right. To be liked.
I still got it, which that was nice. But it
was hard to deal with the situation.
It was very hard.
Eventually, you kind of, because I think you did two podcasts with us, right? Didn't you come back and say, you became friends with the guy?
Well,
not friends, but acquaintances, because you kind of like, you got rid of his sexual interest in you by allowing him to get to know you better. And yeah, then the boners just stopped once he figured out who you are.
I think that worked for me.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Jeffrey Dahmer's last, would be victim, where the guy just like kept talking to him to keep him out of his like killing zone. And I was like, I just kept talking to him like a human being. Yeah.
He said her daughter is Claire. She's a big gal, sir.
No, you know, actually it was funny because I would see him sometimes in the afternoon when I'd work out in the afternoon. I'd see him in the mornings. So in the mornings he was all business. He was a workout guy, and that's when I got to like talk to him. Mm-hmm. So it just became awkward if he tried doing that in the afternoons.
It's Catherine, by the way.
Catherine. Her name is Catherine. I noticed so that anyway, she's using her name.
We actually have an update for you.
We do. Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
We were Fausto was like last year, we were going to to Ravinia to go see Dolly Parton. And
what's Ravinia, Mark?
Ravinia is like a music place up north in the North Shore. And it's kind of a park where you can go and you can go listen to music. You can sit and watch it, or you can just have a picnic in the park. So a lot of people go up there. So it was the Dolly Parton one. So we knew a lot of gay guys were going to go up there. And Fausto was like, he was very excited because he was like, there's going to be gay guys doing it in the bathroom.
So and you guys who are longtime listeners of the podcast, you remember us gushing about the idea of going to the Ravinia Park and Garden Music Festival and be able to enjoy Dolly Parton sort of unplugged with her band, playing her greatest hits. You know, basically when she sings 9 to 5, it's time to get in the car and go home, right? What we didn't expect, it was so jam-packed with gay men. A lot of them were not even fans of Dolly Parton's music. And so you're trying to listen, trying to enjoy and lose yourself in Dolly Parton's unique, magical voice and sensibility. And they're all like, oh my God, did you find out that there were drinks, there were dollar shots at the bar last weekend? It was so amazing. But, and you're like, would you shut the fuck up? I'm trying to enjoy Dolly motherfucking Parton here. So I went to the bathroom. I was like, I got to take a leak. And your gentleman admirer was there.
He was
whipping out his monster cock.
He works out at Ravinia.
And I was just like, Dolly Parton or Dick?
Hold on. He was just right there. And
he was there at the urinal, big cock out, just hanging out. Yeah.
Just, wow.
And I said, that's a big dick you got there.
Did he have any admirers there, or was it awkward?
It was me and him in the bathroom. Oh, and I said, I remember you from the Cheetah. How you doing, you know?
You shook his dick? I shook his dick.
Hi, good to see you again.
You brought a friend.
You know what, though? Like, it's typically those bathrooms at Ravinia are pretty well pot. Like, people are going in and out all the time.
Yeah.
But he was trying it. I swear to God, as God my witness, on my mother's grave.
That's what he's into.
That's
what he likes.
On Eartha Kitt's grave, I swear that he was pulling out his dick.
Wow.
And he was like, it was a nice old big. I was like, I forgot how nice that dick is.
I wish we had gone up there to Ollie with you, because then it would have been Eric, go in there, go in there. You'd see
it. I know. It'd be like, yeah, be like Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton singing I Will Always Love You.
I wonder where he's working out now.
Yeah, he was Islands in the Stream in the urinals. I think Islands in the Stream is a song about water sports, right?
God,
you're getting Jesse so excited talking about penises there. Jesse's our dog.
That's about as big as it was, isn't it?
Yeah,
it was
about as big as his tail. So you know, it's so that's pretty much the end of the story. I think he moved out of town. He got all the dick he wanted, and he moved to greener pastures.
He's just going to one gym after another.
It's like burning bridges until he just like leaves the town.
He's
it's
not
great.
Burning bridges. It's like, you know.
That dick is a bridge. It's a bridge to another human being. There's a lot of people that really admire a big dick.
He had a nice old
dick. He's got a big dick, and he's confident about it.
Mm-hmm. For the record, I never had sex with him. I never made out with him. I never touched it, but I did admire it.
Yes.
From a distance.
I did try talking to him, actually, not just in the morning, but one of the times in the afternoon when he had his dick out.
Yeah.
And it was really funny. I mean, I thought it was funny. I was, hey, what's going on? Hey, how's it going? And he's just stroking his dick. He goes,
oh, he was stroking it in front
of him? He was just kind
of
stroking. He goes, pretty good.
One time I was in the shower at the gym. This is at another gym, not the one we go to. And there was this guy, middle-aged black guy. And they're totally soaping up his cock and just like slapping it like crazy. And he's just kind of like laughing and giggling to himself. And he goes, sometimes you just gotta work it out.
But just, no, the way he does, because I remember him talking in that manner to other people. It's more like, you know, sometimes you just gotta work it out.
Well, oh no, it was full of joy.
But it was kind of a situation where it's like, don't mind me, I just gotta masturbate and rub one out.
No, he was very serious. He was like, sometimes you just gotta work it out.
Was he rubbing it out?
The guy in the shower.
I thought you said other guys were. Wow, he was just doing it himself. Wow, that's freedom.
And he was just like happy as a pig in shit.
Good for him. That's freedom.
So there's a mom in South Carolina who's invented. I'm sorry, North Carolina. It's always North Carolina, isn't it?
Whatever.
She's invented a spray that she claims will attract any Bigfoot within a mile and a half. And what is she calling it? A Bigfoot spray. Bigfoot juice.
Bigfoot juice.
She's using her home concocted bug spray during Bigfoot hunts and asked her husband to make something less feminine smelling. And, she and her husband developed something that was more musky with an outdoor smell. And then the team spotted a Bigfoot. Mm-hmm.
Well, you can tell it works. I mean, if you've looked at her children, you know she's definitely attracting a Bigfoot. <out
there. laughs> You said this is in South Carolina?
North.
Oh, man. It sounds like something more of a South
Carolina
thing.
That's the bathroom bills today,
yeah,
right?
That's one of the bathroom bills places, of course. So the thing is, though, this is a commercial. Like, she's trying to sell this as a bug spray. So I think she's just trying to put some Bigfoot spin on it. Be like, hey, you know, free publicity. I'll say Bigfoot that will be attracted to it.
Yeah, it's like Gorilla Glue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the difference between Bigfoot and Sasquatch?
One's your mom, one's your pop.
Wow.
In this case, that joke actually applies to the woman and her kids. I mean, those little hairy beasts is like, are you sure they're human?
But there is something to be said, though, for like, you know, you don't want to have a lot of that human kind of scent on you when you're out in the woods. If you're trying, you know, you don't want the deer to smell you. So they people don't want to use fragrances.
Yeah.
You want to kind of be downwind from them because they can smell you from like a mile away if you're upwind.
So does the Bigfoot spray do what? It gets big feet? Bigfoot?
It doesn't do anything.
It gets you horny.
There's no Bigfoot. Bigfoot's not coming.
I know, but what did she say it does?
She says it like it'll attract him from a mile and a half away or something. You're like, how do you even know this?
This woman, she probably just put some, you know, juice, you know what I'm saying? And she like, she wants Bigfoot to come. And so she's basically just putting out a press release saying she's horny and she likes big men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big hairy men. She's like, I'm horny. You're welcome. You know, we went to the RuPaul's Drag Con and I was so shocked at the number of listeners of the show. They don't even know my name or Mark's name or anything. They just came up to me and they're like, horny. And I was just like, that is amazing that's the one thing that you remember of the podcast.
You're Mr. Horny.
I'm horny. And I'm actually just quoting Tracy Tyler. Actually, and it's kind of evolved into something else, you know, but it was like, I was just surprised that anybody like, you know, it's always great to meet the listeners of the show face to face. You guys are not just, you know, if you consider yourself fans, awesome. But we think of you as family. We think of you as friends.
That's cool.
And right now we're trying to raise funds for the Kickstarter for Cooking with Drag Queens. We're doing this because, you know, there's a lot of amazing projects happening online. But I think with Cooking with Drag Queens, what thing we do successfully is that we're bringing the cameras into these artists, performers' homes. We're channeling and showcasing how they're going from this very, you know, humble origins and the humble surroundings into something really extraordinary. Hmm. No one else is doing this kind of work. Yeah. And if Cooking with Drag Queens doesn't get funded, we can continue doing other kinds of projects, but this specific project and how we tell the story of all these amazing people will come to an end. And I know you guys believe in the series. I know we believe in it and we're really excited. I mean, we talked to Vander Von Odd. He's going to do it. T.S. Madison.
Oh my God. I love
we're going to fry up some grease. We're going to do three different kinds of fried food. Like we're going to do like a Japanese, a Korean, a Southern fried chicken. We're going to do all kinds of different types of frying styles. And with T.S. Madison, we're going to get Vivacious finally onto Cooking with Drag Queens. This will only happen if we're able to fund season three of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Right now, we're not even a quarter of a way there, and we're a couple weeks into the funding season, and so it's I'm getting a little worried. So if you plan on donating, please donate this week.
And some of you guys, we're going to actually just pick up the phone and call you, because it's like, we know a couple of people who've made some significant donations, and they're just kind of, maybe your lives are busy right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're waiting for somebody else to jump in. Yeah. But this is not going to happen unless you jump in and make this happen.
And this is a show, too. It's like, it has a proven track record. You've seen what we've done. You've seen what we can do. We do plan on changing some things up. We want to include a cooking competition this season to make it, a little more fun, a little more exciting, put some pep into the series. But also, too, it's, we're giving you something that you've already experienced, and we want to keep giving it to you.
And we understand that the show is rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just like, guys, loosen up, have some fun. It's Feast of Fun, not Feast of Responsibility. It's not Feast of Follow the Recipe, Fausto. And so we're going to explore and experiment. We're working with a couple of directors for the next season other than me. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey J is on board. He wants to direct a couple of episodes of Cooking with Drag Queens. And we have some other amazing talent.
That's cool.
Who want to jump in and participate. This can only happen, though. It costs a lot of money to produce the series. It's not something that we can just say, hey, gang, let's get together. Unfortunately, we have to hire a crew. We have to hire an editor to piece it all together. Mm-hmm. And that's most of our expenses. And so in order to continue doing Cooking with Drag Queens, it requires your financial support. So right now, what I want everybody who's listening, and there's enough of you guys that if every person just gave $10, we're funded.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're done.
Mm-hmm. I'll give 10 right now.
$10. Go. Right. Even if you and this is the thing, it's like, Kickstarter may feature the project if enough people just go in there and put in the $3 minimum donation. As queer as a $3 bill, honey, and I know you got a $3 bill in there, because I know you got yourself one of those Parlor coffee drinks.
And so go to cookingwithdragqueens.com and pledge today. We have many different levels, lots of good things you can get, aprons, t-shirts, tote bags, magnets, stickers, all sorts of stuff.
For $200, mm-hmm. you can get a phone date with Vivacious.
I know, that's Whoa. Amazing.
The world's most famous porn star, Billy Santoro, if you just write $100 and say, I want a Skype cam date with Billy Santoro.
Oh, really? Oh, I love Billy.
Billy Santoro is going to do talk to you for an hour. We don't even have to moderate it, although I kind of want to. You know what I'm saying?
You film that. I want to see it.
The world's most famous, commercially successful adult male star. You go to gay bathhouses, you turn on the porn channel, he's there pumping away somebody's butt, or getting pumped himself. He believes in the show. And it, to me, it's really extraordinary. And so we want to see it happen. So cookingwithdragqueens.com. Mm. Now, moving on, we put a lot of ourselves out there, and Mark and I from time to time perform in people's other podcasts and variety shows. And we were involved. I was involved in a show called We Still Like You, mm-hmm. by comedian Shannon Knoll.
They run the night, the host Who? Of the show, Shannon.
Because Shannon is gender nonconforming.
Gender
person.
Nonconforming, yes.
Gender non-binary. Right? So right. Shannon prefers to use the pronoun they. So we call That's Shannon great. They.
I didn't know that. Yeah, Shannon.
They are legion, for they are many.
So, they are
so,
great.
So
you used to work with Shannon.
Shannon was. I was on an improv team, Bella, for 8.5 years, and Shannon was on our team for about a year.
Oh, great!
And we remained great friends. She would come to the show and do stand up. And
they.
I'm sorry, Shannon is a great talent, and
it's hard to use the pronouns and stuff.
It really,
I think Shannon's pretty pronoun flexible.
I think Shannon would forgive me.
Shannon's not here right now.
Shannon Knoll.
May I speak to Shannon right now?
I think Shannon's going to be. I think she's going to be somewhere big. I think they're going to be they. Shannon is going to be somewhere really big in 5 or 10 years. So, mark my words.
And, they've been saying that about us, but the only thing that gets big about us is the bathroom scale.
And when Shannon performed, her comedy was hysterical.
Yeah.
Great stand-up.
Yep. Who they? Oh, yeah. Who's on first? No. So anyways, I talked to Shannon about this because Shannon's like, Fausto, I love your energy. I want you to participate in this. And I said, well, I got a story about being a sex worker. And when I was 18 years old.
Is that true?
I was 19. I was 19. Okay. In Texas at the height of the AIDS crisis. And
dangerous man.
Yeah. Shannon was like, what? And I was like, you're pulling my leg. And I was like, nope. Bonafide true. I have receipts. I have people who will vouch and verify. Mm-hmm. I got timestamps.
So you told this. You got up. And
so I got up and told the story. And, you know, I think a lot of the people who are performing one were, you know, much younger, and most of their stories were like, I pooped in my bed, or I lied to a tourist when I was on vacation. So it was very minor kind of things. Yeah. And then I came, I think I was either next to last, right? Mm-hmm. And I gave this whopping bombshell story that was pretty hilarious too, because I actually imitate the customers that I had, and one guy sounded like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard. Wow. Boy, I didn't come to pay you to play me a cabaret, okay? Just come grab the lube and meet me in my bedroom and give me a massage. So people are just like, they're gasping and laughing and really, you know, floored by the story. And this guy at the end of the show,
they do a Q&A
afterwards. Mm-hmm. They do a follow up, and yeah. I'm great at Q&As, right? So I answer I repeat the question that the guest said, and he was asking us, what was the impact that the internet has had on sex workers, since I was actually doing this when people would pick up the gay magazines and call those ads in the back.
Because it really blew his mind that there was like, oh my God, people were doing sex work before you could have like an internet app for it or Craigslist, that kind of thing. And he actually, during the Q&A, said, I used to be a sex worker too, you know, for a short period of time when I was young.
And I said, you know, I think it's important for us to tell these stories, not necessarily because it's, you know, we're fetishizing our sexual experience, but because I believe that sex work should be legalized in order to make it safer for people to reduce exploitation of minors and individuals, and to, you know, affect positively human sexual slavery and trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, part of the reason that all that trafficking happens is because a lot of this stuff is driven underground.
Yeah. And people don't necessarily want to come forward because they're involved in what's considered illegal activity. So there's a lot of shame involved in it.
Yep.
And so, you know, the audience applauded very politely and stuff. And this gentleman who told the story, who really, you know, did something very brave as well, he was on a date with a girl that he met on Tinder.
Oh, it was a Tinder date, because he came up afterwards and he was like, he was kind of emotional and kind of was like, oh man, I really loved your story. And he was kind of excited. And he was said that he was on a date with this girl. It was the first date. And that as soon as he fessed up about being a former sex worker, she just got up and left and ghosted. And I guess he texted her and she's just like, listen, dude, I'm sorry, that's just too much to take. And I'm like, well, you know, you did kind of spring that on her in public on your first date. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, but she was sitting there, she was applauding him for talking about being all sex positive and applauding him for his sex work. But then when it comes to me, she gets all pissy about it and like runs off. And I'm just kind of like, you know, I mean, Fausto, I think you were a little more.
I was nice completely sympathetic because I'm like, you know, part of it is like a lot of cisgendered women who are big fans of drag queens. Mm-hmm. The minute their man's like, oh, I'm putting on some pantyhose, they're out of there.
Yeah.
And so you could be like, oh my God, yes, Bianca Del Rio. Oh, she gives me life. You know, and then their husband's like, I put on a wig. And he's like, divorce.
Yeah. So it's something very, it may be something very much like that too. But, you know, doing this podcast over the years and talking to therapists about relationships, one thing that I've really learned is that, you know, when you have that kind of stuff, if you have something like that you've done that's considered bad or like risky or something like that, it's not something you necessarily want to put out on your first date.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you want to do later down the road. So not because you're necessarily ashamed of it or something like that, is that the person needs to know the full you before they can get some of those things that are kind of triggering. Now, if he had said that to her like 4 months in, 2 months in, she'd be like, hey, this guy's great. You know what I mean? That's just a small part of who he is.
Yeah.
But if it's something you mentioned on the first date, that's not something a small part of who you are. That's a big part of who you are.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, selling sex is hard for some people.
What did Hillary Clinton say about marriage equality? Something about something, something steps. that you had to take progressive
incremental steps.
Did that approach to marriage equality work so well, or was it really just deciding to get this baby done?
Well, I mean, it was one because of the Supreme Court, you know, God rest the soul of Edie Windsor, who just passed away last week. But I would say that the incremental steps did happen because it was gained, you know, it's wider acceptance, and then bam, something happened.
Did you, when you first met me, we met at a sleazy leather bar called the Eagle.
Yeah. And are you sleazy?
I'm a little sleazy.
Yeah.
I'm good. Also cheesy. And we got out of the bar, and the minute you got out of the bar, you saw my hair in the better lighting. Mm-hmm. And what did you see, and what did you think?
You had your head was buzzed, and then you had rainbow jaguar spots.
And what did you think about it?
I thought, well, okay, but that's, you know, whatever.
You say, I'm here with a wild child. And you took me home, and we had some fun. And we fell in love because we both watch Earth Final Conflict. Mm-hmm. So
what
the point of the story is, you know, some people,
but we're different. We're two men.
You're an adventurous person. We're,
that kind of thing. You know, this is a, you know, heteronormative couple. It's different with straight people.
Well, it shouldn't be. And part of it is we're working to make the world a different place. So we should put a little bit of gentle, loving pressure on people to be a little bit more accepting when somebody bears their soul to you, especially on a first date. Treat it as a deal breaker and walk away from the situation.
I totally disagree with that. And it'd be something different if it came up in a conversation, because from what I understand also too, he does a sex positive podcast. So that might be something you want to bring up on a first date. It might be. You know what I mean? Do you want to bring it up in front of a crowd of people and tell your first date the same time that you're telling 30 other people in the audience? Is that how you want to do it?
It's a tricky situation for him to weigh in, and it's not easy.
I don't know.
You're a straight guy. Tell us how to get some pussy.
I think he can do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't expect the person to always be on board with him. No matter what it is.
She has the right to say no.
She has the right to walk out. It's a freaking Tinder date. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like introduce each other to, you know, their respective parents the week before. It's a Tinder date. It's the first date. Now, the fact that this guy is saying that he was a sex worker the first night, it's like
in front of a room of strangers.
She's allowed to be uncomfortable and she's allowed to walk. And that's just the way it is. People, girls have walked for less reasons.
That's true.
If he stood in front of the room and said, I also love to go scuba diving.
Yeah.
Do you think she would have left? No.
No, because it's a different thing.
If he said, I'm into, on the weekends, like to dress up as a clown and entertain needy children at birthdays, parties.
It's not the same thing.
It's not the same,
And if he stood in front of the group and said, you know what? I love to eat ass, too. And sometimes I don't even wash my mouth and eat pussy then.
Well, it's like, what if your guys' first date, if Mark stood up in front of an audience and said, you know, he's pro-life, and he'll always be pro-life, and he's a log cabin Republican.
Yeah, how about that?
I'm like, who the hell is this guy?
Why are we talking about this? The reason why we're talking?
No, these are issues that people are uncomfortable with. Yeah,
and this was our encounter with this guy that everybody is talking about.
So we had forgotten it, and we forgot about it. It was all said and done, moving on, right? Yeah. Nothing happened.
I still thought about it every now and then, kind of giggled about it.
Yeah, and we thought it was funny, you know, because it was so weird and awkward. And, you know, and kind of hilarious, too, because he was this big, tall, hairy guy, you know, and he's like, oh, I was a gay sex worker, too. You know, I love you, Fausto. And, you know, the girl's like,
did he say it was gay sex work?
He was doing with man.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't remember that part.
And so I was just like, he was kind of also, he liked my performance, and it was Me Too fandom kind of stuff.
Do you think he was turned on by you a little bit?
A little bit. Maybe. I think so.
That's
you know,
that's
I was trying to gauge. It was just like, well, he's with a girl, but he seemed a little gay. I don't know.
He's bi-curious.
So anyway, his name is Eric Berry. He's a comedian. Yeah. He wrote this love letter to Chicago. It says, goodbye, Chicago. It ran in the Huffington Post. And basically, it was like he came here to Chicago like 3.5 years ago from San Francisco and then proceeded to tell everyone in Chicago why he's leaving and how much he hates the city. And how he gained 40 pounds. He had to pay $7 for a beer here, which I guess in San Francisco was only like $3, which I find hard to believe.
Yeah.
That the city's too big. big that he doesn't like walking everywhere, but he also is mad that he gained 40 pounds. Was it 40 or 30 pounds?
40.
40 pounds.
First sentence of his article. Mm-hmm.
And the girls don't like him here, and the for some reason Chicago's rated as the best beach town in the world. Why?
Yeah. No, I mean, he's got a point with the beach thing. Mm-hmm.
but everything else. Listen, this is a pretty good gay
beach. It's a sweet. Oh. You know? Chicago's wonderful. Yeah. I love the beaches in Chicago. I think he was
these people. They'll come for you next.
Who's these people? The bloggers who responded to
a lot of especially, well, because, you know, the thing is, like, here in Chicago, the comedians, the comedian community is pretty tight-knit, too.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of trying to be in that community. I think a lot of people didn't really necessarily appreciate some of his comedy. You can tell us a little bit more about that. But there's a lot of reaction and think pieces about his life here in Chicago.
Yeah, I think his article was kind of sad, actually, because it's kind of what you guys, that example you guys gave about him getting up on stage, saying this thing about being a sex worker, and then that girl walking out. Mm-hmm. He was so offended by this. Mm-hmm. It's the same. He brings up something else in his article about him grabbing a beer at the bar, $7 Lagunitas, goes, sees four women sitting down and decides to just chat with them. Now, who does that? I mean, these women are there for a reason. They're talking. They're probably at a four top. And he just talks with them, and he's so offended that they don't want to talk. They don't reciprocate it.
It's
hilarious. Like, he's so offended. So then he puts down the empty beer bottle on their table and he walks out.
Well, these women that he was talking about, one of them, she was a bartender at one point in time. Now she's a comedian, and she said that the guy came over, interrupted their conversation, and then said, to quit being so catty and just calm down. Like, and they were in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah.
And then he says in the article, the woman out of nowhere just says, like, we all have boyfriends. None of us are going to date you. And she's like, comes forward. She's like, I did not say that. First of all, I don't think all of us had boyfriends, so I wouldn't have said that. And what I actually said is, none of us are going to fuck you, so you might as well leave. Because she's like, I've been in this, bar business long enough to know, is like, when people disrespect you like that in a bar as a female, because these guys are coming on with all their white male privilege, is you really just have to step up and be like, back off, fucker.
Exactly.
And she's just like, in her mind, she didn't really even think much about it. And then she's just like, now 3 years later, this isn't like, it's really stuck in his mind, this one thing.
This rejection.
Yeah, this rejection.
And it's that, like, rejection of like a first date in Tinder, him walking, the lady walking out. It's like so... of course she would walk out. Of course these people are telling you to get the fuck away from them. You know, I've talked to girls at bars before, but it's usually like when they're at a bar and it's just them and it's this quiet moment where I can talk to them. When it's four women, sitting down, you just leave them alone.
Yeah, you don't just barge in there.
If you're trying to get some pussy for four women hanging out together, that is an impenetrable wall.
Exactly.
But you know, you make eye contact. I'm gay,
I even know that.
Yeah, maybe if one of them is making eye contact with me, then it's like there's something going on.
You do it,
but
like,
just like, hey, what are you guys doing? It's like, we were having a great time until the big hairy man, you came over here.
You got to separate one of them from the herd. Like the wildebeests, the lion and the wildebeest.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if Eric might be listening to this podcast, and we want to help a brother out, you know?
Yeah.
Because he seemed like he has a good heart, and he's just seemed thirsty. And he felt he was thirsty. He was thirsty
for those $7 Lagunitas.
And he didn't get to drink. He didn't get to quench his thirst.
Oh, I think he says he gained 40 pounds while he was here. So,
well, I'm talking about like for affection, for connection with human beings. He felt isolated, obviously.
Yeah.
What advice to people who are listening to the show right now who can relate to comedian Eric Barry's predicament and want to be like, burn the bridges, say, hasta la vista, you shitty town. I'm moving to a place that appreciates me. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice could you give to somebody like that?
Well, understand your space, where you're going to. For example, like I think it was last year, Eric had also written an article about how he took a cisgendered woman to an IML sex party. Now, IML
a
gay leather sex party, and was, befuddled why this person wasn't more accepted. Now, the person, from what I understand, was not kicked out, but nobody was really paying attention and kind of ignoring her, because it's like, that's not why gay men don't go to leather sex parties to entertain women.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not what they do.
Yeah.
And so there's a certain amount of cluelessness in some sense, or a warped sense of reality.
Entitlement.
Entitlement, yeah. or expectations, you know?
Yeah.
And he's thinking, in my mind, it's like everything's, you know, sex positive, that you should accept this person. You know, I accept that person as a sexual being. I just don't necessarily have to have sex with them.
Yeah.
And now some people have complaints against his comedy too, because like he tries to invoke this idea of being sex positive in his comedy, and it also doesn't work out very well.
Well, he has this habit, or this, what's it called? Doing something outrageous and then judging the people for not mm-hmm. for not feeling the same way. I think that's
like,
the thing.
That's
the thing.
So outrageous. Like a foot
well, not a, not outrageous. Not so much outrageous. I mean, I don't know much about his comedy, but I'm just saying in general, mm-hmm. bringing the woman to the show, saying he was a sex worker. Mm-hmm. Why are you offended? Taking that. I'm sorry. Who did he take to the leather?
A woman.
He took a woman there.
A lady.
He took a woman there. He got some flack for that. He's asking, why is this? You know, he goes to a bar, mm-hmm. meets a woman. You mm-hmm. know, says, are you sex positive? She's like, what does that mean? And he judges them right away. Like, mm-hmm. like he throws this like very sex forward thing out there, and when people don't respond to it, he right. judges them, and that's where he gets his power.
Comedian Katie Rice.
Hold on a second. So he's suffering from a lack of empathy in the sense that he's asking the women he's with to be as flexible with being shocked as mm. as he is. Mm.
I think it's women, but I also think it's an audience when he's sure. I heard like a foot fetish thing where he was given a foot fetish on stage, doing a foot fetish, like how someone would react when they're doing a foot or when they're involved in a sexual mm-hmm. foot fetish thing. And he kind of judged the audience because they weren't laughing.
Comedian Katie Rife says that about him, if the comics were uncomfortable or the crowd didn't respond well to a bit, his bits in particular, it was their fault for not being sex positive enough. Just like if a woman didn't want to have sex with him, they must be hopelessly closed-minded and monogamous.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
As a performer, and we've all been in that situation, we're standing on stage and you're giving your heart out there, or you're trying to engage with the audience, and for one reason or another, audience is not having what you're mm-hmm. selling.
Yeah.
What's a healthy, constructive way to react to that situation?
You listen to it and you take notes, and you find out very, very quickly what audiences like, what they don't like. I think audiences in general like situations. You know, I've kissed a few men on stage before at improv mm-hmm. shows. But oh, it's yeah. not funny unless
Mark and I just gave each other some evil looks.
But it's not funny unless there's stakes to it, or else I would just go on stage and
steak.
You know, like, you know what I mean? If there's if there's, you know, some sort of like relationship yeah. or some sort of like, you know, maybe it's mm-hmm. two married men out.
Did
in the
you use
shed.
Tongue, or was it just like a quick peck on the lips?
It was faux tongue. French kissing.
That. Yeah. Mm. I hate, you know, when I'm watching
I think I may have French kissed one guy one time. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the experience like for you?
God, it was different. I felt tingly.
I've met up with a woman one time. And
women have softer lips than men.
And I was just like, where the hell's the facial, the scruff? You know,
yeah,
I was
there's
like,
no scruff.
I was like, what is this gender ambiguity? I was like, it's called a woman Fausto.
Yeah.
There's no hair on the lips. And she had been eating Cool Ranch Doritos. Mm-hmm. So she was a lesbian, and we're at a bar, we're drunk.
Yeah.
And she's like, you never kissed a woman, I never kissed a man, let's make out. And I was like, okay. And my friend Amy, she was really hot for her. And so I made out with her, and yeah. I was like, I had her and you didn't.
You like, that was like a callback from mm-hmm. the guy in Texas.
Kinda. And so,
I had her and you didn't. Get the lid.
And so we for the rest of her life, we called her Dorito Breath.
Oh, and so
she's actually a very nice person.
So the thing with Eric, it's
Dorita.
The other Eric Berry, is that it's you know, it's New York's problem now. Because
he's moving to New York.
So he moved to New York, and he thinks that, you know, that New York will be more welcoming to him.
Maybe.
I think it's all, I've met people in the city, I've lived in the city for 16 years, mm-hmm. and to them, this is wrong about Chicago. Everything is wrong about Chicago, and it's better someplace else, mm-hmm. but the problem is with them. I'll say that to your viewers, you know, or your listeners, I'm sorry. If you're in a town that you don't like, I think that the town might suck, but you also have to look at yourself and what can you do, and is it, is the problem you?
Right. Well, and that's the thing.
If you can afford to move, why not move?
Why not move? Because sometimes moving can just change your life dramatically. But the thing is, too, is like we said in the intro here, Chicago is the town where you come, you do your homework, you do your footwork, you study your artistry, you go to school here, your craft. Chicago's always been known as that kind of crossroads of the world.
Of course.
Where people come and do their thing, and when they're ready, you move on.
To New York or LA.
And so,
but you know what? Chicago is an amazing town and excels at the way Hollywood. Well, actually, you know, motion pictures actually came out of Chicago.
They did.
Concept, really, you know, with the exception of New York Times, the modern newspaper came out of Chicago. The talk show, the morning radio, WGN's contribution to programming, to children's television programming with the Bozo Show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just so much of that, what we think of media and culture.
Yeah.
Podcasting would not be what it is today. And, you know, I don't want to blow my own horn, but what people think about podcasts and how they're structured and what happens on a podcast is, in a lot of ways, it's you know, you remember that Simpsons episode where they cloned Homer so many times he turned into Family Guy?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we've been cloned so many times that people who are imitating other podcasts don't even realize that they're imitating us at a certain point.
Yeah.
And this city has been, you know, second city. Saturday Night Live wouldn't exist. Stand-up comedy, improv.
Yeah.
Chicago's contributed so much to the hearts and minds and the entertainment. Studs Terkel, Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
I mean,
Phil Donahue.
Jenny Jones. Not Jenny Jones. But she's an amazing...
Jerry Springer.
But Jenny Jones is amazing. An amazing video blogger. She does Jenny Can Cook. She's still on YouTube. She's amazing. This city, maybe it's something in our water as it is in New York, but the city is really cultivates media and theater and entertainment in a way that no other city in the world does.
I agree.
And New York and LA.
No,
I mean,
because New York and LA
Hollywood
are great at monetizing because they have the money and they have the population to monetize it. Yeah. We're Feast of Fun, we're the incubation chamber for a lot of LGBT talent. Think about all the LGBT talent that right now is a rising star. Where did you hear about them first? Right here on this podcast. And Mark and I were just like, how much money is Bianca Del Rio earning this year? Oh, my heart.
But you bring up a really good thing, though, because Eric Berry when Eric Berry was here and when he was performing, the audiences in Chicago are intelligent.
Mm.
Like, they're intelligent. They see a lot of stuff. Yeah. They know a lot of improvisers. Mm-hmm. They are improvisers. They know comedians. Like, comedians have said that before, big comedians. Chicago's just like a very intelligent audience.
Mm-hmm.
They see it all the time.
Without a doubt.
So if Mr. Foot Fetish isn't getting a laugh, then maybe it's time to rework it or dump that bit.
Right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
I have to say, I agree with you very much so. You know, the audience here in Chicago, we're used to seeing comedy and comedians go out and see other people's work. And so the bar is raised pretty high. When we had Meg Grunewald come on the show, and she kind of did a little bit of a review for the drag queen of comedy, you know, she's just not a fan of drag. She's coming in as somebody with a comedy training, a comedy background, and goes and sees a lot of comedy shows.
Sure.
So she was expecting the bar for that show to be set really high.
Yeah.
And then she discovered that it's drag queens.
Yeah.
Filmed the entire show.
Yeah.
And I've been editing some clips and scenes of it to put in the Cooking with Drag Queens Kickstarter. And it holds up.
Yeah.
It's funny stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the caveat for that. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who these queens are, if you don't follow drag like you guys and we do, it's not going to make sense.
Right.
And a lot of the jokes are just not going to land.
Right.
But if you do know these queens, it rewards your knowledge and your investment. And I think why drag is such a hot topic right now and such an exploding field is because it rewards an investment into knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know a lot about baseball, so fucking what? Everybody knows about baseball. But if you know a lot about drag, you get rewarded by the secret kiki, the jokes, the inside mm-hmm. references that other people don't get.
Yep.
And so it's a field that really cultivates that fandom. And so Meg, not being aware of that, I think may not have actually caught on to a lot of the humor that was put between the lines there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I've heard that before with like Stern. You listen to Howard Stern. Yeah. You listen to Howard Stern once. You're just like, OK, that's just a bunch of guys talking. But then you listen to it for a month and suddenly, you know, the guys, you know, mm-hmm. the callbacks, you know, the things they say, the common things they say, why it's funny, why this, you know. So you might not get the callbacks in day one, but, you know, you stick with it or you know these people. It's like a relationship and it's like a serial. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people have been listening for this show
13 years.
13 years. They're like, when's he going to say horny? I want him to say horny. Horny!
You already did.
Or how about this? Like, angels, babies, children, or what? Man's rejection is God's protection. But you know, there's a lot of things like my mate, the cleaning lady, Hortensia. Yeah. Like, there's stuff that you as an artist do that in order to cultivate the audience, you have to reward people for coming back day in and day in out. And part of it is that's just how human relationships are. You know, there's something comforting and wonderful.
You need those touchstones. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of these, you know, of this guy, Eric Barry, and I think anybody who's frustrated with an audience that's not clicking with you is please, please, please don't ever take it personally that the audience doesn't click with what you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
Because your job as an artist is to find your audience. Mm. And not every human being in the world is going to like what you do. In fact, that's called tyranny. That's the Trump administration. That's North Korea. Mm. That's a dictator is somebody who wants every single person on the planet to applaud for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be that person.
No.
Because dictators are miserable. Trump is miserable.
Yeah.
He, you know, Trump is, his son says he's suicidal. And he's the fucking president of the United States. It should be a roller coaster party ride. Barack Obama said it was the greatest experience of his life. You know, being president of the United States should not be a burden. I mean, it should be a responsibility, should be intense. But the fact that you're like, nobody likes me. I'm like, stand back, Trump, the Trump that lives inside all of us.
Yeah.
And think to yourself, why is it so important for every person to unanimously like me?
Yeah.
It's not reasonable and doesn't make great art. Good art is about connecting with people.
And I tell you what, I've had a lot of bad shows, and those bad shows are, if you allow them to be, they can be some of the best learning experiences for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're not learning from those shows, if you're just, you know, being bullheaded and say, why did you get this foot fetish thing? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I keep bringing that up. Then you're not growing. You know, you're not growing as
foot fetish, the most boring of fetishes.
Yeah,
ever.
The most boring of fetishes. I remember
foot fetishes. People want you to be like freaked out by it, but you're like, whatever.
I remember I have a foot fetish story. You want to hear it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I was there was this liquor store near my house when I was growing up.
Yeah,
and it was one of those places. I never bought liquor there. I didn't drink. I didn't care to, but I was like 17, 18, but you can just buy pornos there. You know, they had
porn. So you'd go in and buy porn.
I'd buy porn. Like I'd buy a VHS. Right.
Where would you watch that? Your parents' house?
No, I had my own room. Yeah.
Okay. You had your own VCR.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. You damn right. I did.
Oh, hot. You had your own masturbation booth.
That's right. Yeah.
And so
I'm going to be away for a while, Mom.
Did she know you would buy pornos?
No. So anyway, but you have to do it really fast. You know, I didn't want to be in there and linger. You know, I was 17, 18. I didn't want anyone to see me that I knew either. So I just remember grabbing one and leaving. And then I got back home and I was like, foot thing or foot something. Okay. You know, as long as people are coming and shit. And so I put it on and I'm like, uh-oh. And it's just... You know, God, it's like he's jacking off right near their foot. I'm like, okay, it's gonna penetration any moment, and they just like jack off right in the lady's foot. I'm like, ah, oh, there's $8 down the drain.
Yeah,
I guess I could use this as a door jam or something.
There was never any vaginal penetration.
There was nothing. I think there was like a little blowing, but it was mostly just like jacking off in the girl's foot, and it took a while. I mean, it's probably like Eric Berry's show. I couldn't watch it.
I keep thinking Dave Barry. I was like, Dave Barry's gotten really crazy.
Dave Barry's a good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. We were in New York City for DragCon, and the guys on the you know, to entertain ourselves mostly. We didn't get to do anything, get on Scruff and Grindr and all. And Mark, you made an observation that people in New York are all about eating ass.
They want to eat ass, really? And a lot of them were into feet for whatever reason. But
yeah, it's really like, and the suburbs is that way. You know, it's like in the city, no one ever asked me to eat ass. It's like, to me, I'm like, I don't want to be eaten where you've been shitting. You know,
oh, and the well, you come around, you eat ass now.
Sometimes. But the thing is, somebody who eats your ass, who puts their lips on your butthole, the next thing they want to do is make out with you. And I'm like, I'm not going to be smelling my own farts. I don't want to be kissing my own asshole either.
You sit well, in your own farts all the
know,
time.
You know, Fausto, I don't mean to sound like Eric Berry, but you sound really close minded, like a close minded Midwestern. Right?
Well, maybe you should explore right. that.
You know, New right. York is way better.
Okay. Speaking of Uranus, the Cassini spacecraft, one of the most important scientific missions the United States and humanity has ever done, has ended its 20-year mission. Crashing into Saturn, its grand finale, and no more transmissions from the Cassini Aww. Probe. For most of our adult lives, we've gotten spoiled, and I do mean spoiled, into regularly seeing high-resolution images of one of the great giant planets in our solar system. Mm. We've managed to probably raise more questions and send probes into the moons of Saturn, including Titan, to see if there's the building blocks of life. If life exists anywhere in our solar system, one of the likely candidates, thanks to Carl Sagan, was the planet Titan. And this is the moon Titan, sorry. And his idea was to send a Huygens space probe through Cassini into that moon. And they were just like found more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. And so it really is an extraordinary moment in our history as United States. You know, we would not have this amazing space exploration agency as NASA if it wasn't for a wide variety of factors, including the Cold War. But a lot of people don't realize that the assassination of John F. Kennedy really struck a nerve in this country. And they said John F. Kennedy's legacy was exploration of space, and we could not let that go. Had John F. Kennedy lived, some historians argue that we probably would have lost the political will to invest billions of dollars into exploring space and the just what world would we live in if one we were not curious and one that invested so much into science and exploration. So really the Cassini spacecraft doing its final transmission for fans of Star Trek, for fans of space and in science is really just a bittersweet ending to a really huge legacy.
Can you say probe again?
What?
Probe. Yeah. It's not an anal probe. It's not going around Uranus.
Probe in Uranus. The Saturn.
Well,
Saturn.
You guys are so Midwestern.
Robert Picardo, the guy who played the Doctor on Star Trek Voyager, he's part of the Planetary Society, so he wrote a little Cassini opera to kind of say goodbye. Because, you know,
I know the feeling, though.
As you know, he's a hologram character, and he used to sing opera, because, like, I guess in real life, he actually sings opera.
That's how Star Trek is like, oh, you like to bake cupcakes? Well, your character now bakes cupcakes.
How good are you at singing opera, Fausto? Do you want to try it?
La Donna Immobile! I can't even see what the fuck is going on. What do you want me to look at?
It's right here. It's in the document.
I'll just scroll down. What am I looking at? Google, Pinterest, Reddit, print... September 13th.
Not like, on the top, right?
On the top.
How do you not see?
Well, show me.
Oh, I scrolled down.
Yeah, he's mad because I was like,
I don't know how to use
a laptop.
Oh, there it is.
Star Trek Voyager.
I'll just improvise.
Here, it's right there. Do you not see that?
There it is.
Goodbye, Cassini. Your mission's fini. Bravo, Cassini. Have some linguine. That's probably all operas.
As it was going down into crashing, that's what it heard for the last time.
Man, it was a pity kill. What is it? A mercy killing.
Mm.
Oh, man.
Hearing Robert Picardo's voice for the last time. As you go into the great beyond, it was like, please kill me. Cassini's like, now I know how 7 of 9 felt. Mm.
So WBEZ here in Chicago did a study on, because I guess one of the reporters there had heard that back in the day, the boys at the Chicago schools, like in high school, used to swim naked.
You used to swim naked in high school.
I used to swim naked in high school, too. And so the reporters, wow. They were like, why did this happen? So they tried to figure out, and they interviewed a bunch of different people and how it came to be. And there was a couple of different theories out there. One of them is that the early filtration systems couldn't handle filtering the fabric that was coming through because, like, everybody was wearing, like, wool, I guess, basically wool underwear or wool swimsuits. And also, too, is like they were saying that the schools didn't necessarily have money to pay for swimsuits for the guys to all wear, but would they have had money for the girls to wear? I don't know.
So did the girls swim naked?
The girls wore swimsuits, I guess. But the girls also, too, is like, you know, they've got other things going on, so maybe they, you know, they viewed women's bodies differently. But I also think, so they didn't really have, like, a firm conclusion on how it happened, but it kind of stopped in the 70s. When they came on with, like, nylons and stuff like that for different bathing suits. But I think that the most important thing, and this is what was forgotten by this article, is that we look at our human bodies a lot differently nowadays than we used to. It was like it was very common for men to just bathe in the nude. You would go to the YMCA and it was just for men and you were just in the nude because these kind of institutions, these bathhouses kind of came, or the pools came out of the bathhouse system, really. And so guys would go there to get clean and they would just, you know, hang out maybe in the steam room.
You could have a good meal. You could do whatever you feel.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you can see a 13-year-old boy. Well, now you can't do that.
Now you can't.
Well, make America great again.
And so, but I'm just saying that's the other thing though too. Now is like they're talking about like when you do these they're redoing gyms and now so that people have more privacy when they're changing. Before it was like you'd go into a locker room and just people were just guys were just naked I was growing up and they were just hang around naked.
Totally.
And now the way we view the body, I think there's a lot more shame around it. But also too, I think maybe it's because of our body sizes changed because you know back in the 70s when this mostly started stopping. Mine actually, my school did it until like almost mid 80s.
Wow.
But the reason why that stopped is because I guess one of the coaches was caught diddling one of the guys. Yeah. I also went to a Catholic boys' school, too. So I think that they were like, well, let's keep this going as long as we can keep this going. But I think, too, you know, we have, you know, our nation has an obesity epidemic and people are concerned, am I too fat? Am I too thin? How do I look like? So people don't necessarily, you know, they don't want to be naked in front of other people. And then also, too, we have these ideas of identity, because before, back in the day, you know, people knew about queer people or gay people, but it wasn't present. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily talked about. So you could just hang out naked with your friends and it wasn't necessarily a big deal.
I'm going to put something over you here. I'm going to lay it on you.
Yeah.
Our obesity epidemic is a direct consequence of the government's reaction to World War II. And the possibility of nuclear holocaust.
Okay.
So what happened in World War II is that we were all like, fuck, we're going to get bombed. We're going to have to live in bomb shelters.
Yeah.
So the federal government had a plan to take all this milk that they had paid these farmers to produce and turned it into cheese. Right. They had all this processed cheese sitting in warehouses.
Yeah.
And in the event that there might be a, you know, a holocaust, a nuclear holocaust, and we would have to be driven underground. They had eggs that were all freeze-dried, potatoes. You know, basically, they made food non-perishable.
Yeah.
Until World War II, you know, you went to a grocery store, and most of the food that people ate perished.
It's a week old.
Bread, a couple days, it's gone, right? So that the idea of making non-perishable food was something that was developed by the government as a survival mechanism.
Preservatives, yeah.
So we, as the U.S. government, we had warehouses of all this powdered food sitting around, canned, not doing anything.
Yeah.
Here comes the Kraft Corporation and says, well, you know what? This food's just burning a hole in your pocket. We'll take it off of you for free. We'll put it to use. So, you know, snack chips, Doritos, Velveeta, sugar, processed sugar, processed wheat, soy, dairy, eggs, cheese, milk products is basically the building blocks of our junk food.
Sure.
What happened then is all these companies got rich off of their raw materials that were being produced by the U.S. government. Instead of just saying, okay, now we're going to start paying for these materials, which doesn't make a lot of sense because producing these raw materials costs a lot of money. It takes more money it takes more energy to create a bag of Doritos than to say a plate of rice and beans. So these corporations then turned around to the government and said, if you continue giving us these raw ingredients at a very low cost, we will fund your next election campaign. We will subsidize these corn farmers, these dairy farmers.
Yeah.
And so right now, our food supply system is a system that's dysfunctional.
Sure.
It's broken. It's heavily subsidized in favor of producing non-perishable foods. And as a consequence, our bodies as Americans have changed dramatically because of the foods that we're consuming.
Sure.
And that's why we're now sort of dealing with these consequences for World War II, is because these foods that we've made accessible to us to eat are actually foods that were designed to survive the human race if we were living in bomb shelters.
Yep.
It's not a healthy way to be. Mm. And of course, when you're eating for a famine, it's very different than for everyday eating.
Mm. Yep. So you have to create your own famine. And so,
some regards, yeah. And so, what we need to do is we need to fix our broken food supply system. But unfortunately, really, what's causing Trump to get elected, what's causing us not to have health care, is the same factor that's causing us to be obese and causing us to subsidize, mm-hmm. and to a very inefficient way. Mm-hmm. Our food supply system.
So we
need to ultimately fix all this stuff. We need to change the way we vote. So it's not party A or party B. You need to be able to have first choice, second choice, or third choice. The term is called first past the post. Mm-hmm. And so until we can implement that kind of voting, we're stuck with all the problems that we have. We'll still have an obesity epidemic until we can vote for elections differently. Because mm-hmm. the consequence of that is that you basically have a two-party system where both politicians can be easily bribed against the interests of Americans.
Mm.
And that is your information for today.
I want to thank everybody for listening. And please visit cookingwithdragqueens.com and pledge today. Let's get this Kickstarter funded so we can focus on getting it out there.
If you can't cook for yourself, how the hell are you going to cook for somebody else? Can I get a bon appetit up in here?
Bon appetit. Eric, I want to thank
you. Wait, Eric, you didn't say bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Because you're a big believer in cooking at home.
Oh, yeah, big believer. I don't like preservatives. I try to cook at home. I try not to eat crap that's processed. Yeah, I try not to. I do every once in a while, but...
Of course, we all
do. It tastes so good.
I have some macaroni and cheese in the refrigerator. Yeah.
Can I have some?
Yeah, but I made it homemade, though.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
I mean, I'm a big fan of chicken satay with a peanut sauce. Mm-hmm. That tastes good. Mm-hmm. That stuff is perishable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a bag of Doritos, honey, I'll go down on it. Give me a big joint blunt and a bag of Fritos, Cheetos, honey. Yeah. And I'm good, you know. But afterwards I'm done eating, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that.
Oh, yeah. It makes you feel horrible.
It does. You're just like, oh, my God, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah. You know? I think you bring up a wonderful point real quick about how it's all money. If that stuff didn't make so much money, it wouldn't be around.
But the thing about it is like it only makes money because somebody's being subsidized. Our tax dollars are paying to create these products that ultimately hurt us.
Yeah.
I agree. If chips like Doritos should be like gourmet food, it should be expensive.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the cheapest thing in the vending machine. Definitely. It should be the most expensive.
Totally.
We want to remind folks that Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of gorgeous, handsome, big dick, and moderately dick. And any size.
Thank you.
People just like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and you can listen to Eric Clemens, mm-hmm. not Eric Berry, tell his story about being accosted by a well-hung, amorous gentleman.
Yeah, big day.
I wouldn't say accosted, right? Just kind of stalked, right?
Just stalked, yeah.
Informed.
He's putting out the line, but I wasn't eating the worm.
So the show is called Smoking in the Boys Room, and you can search Eric Clemens on Feast of Fun.
Or just go to the show, hit the tag for Eric in the bottom.
Yeah. And we can't do it without your support.
Visit feastoffun.com/plus and sign up if you're not a Plus member yet, or if your Plus member has lapsed, please consider renewing. Just email me at mail@feastoffun.com and we'll get it all sorted out.
Eric, how can people, if they want to hire your copywriting services or just want to see how big your dick is?
Well, you can see how big my dick is at ericpaulclemens.com.
What? That's it. You have your own website.
I have my own website. I'm kind of reworking it right now, but it should be looking good in about a week or so. But
I'm looking at it here right now. Is it one of those square? It is a Squarespace thing.
It is a Squarespace.
You have like clip art here. It's not even you.
I know. It's on purpose.
Dude.
What is it? Eric Paul Clemens?
Yeah.
It came right up.
Girl, at least put a photo that we took. We took so many nice photos of you.
Yeah. So I'm reworking it right now. The clip art thing was just for fun. And but yeah, I have some of my work up. I have a lot more on the way. But it's just, you know, it's advertising, so it's probably boring stuff too. People who are, you know, your fans surfing the net.
You have the most bare bones resume ever. It's like, as the places that you worked, you're like, Euro, Chicago, copywriter. Kramer, copywriter insert.
Quit reading him.
But over here at the end, you say, food. Yes, please.
No, he's worked he's worked on a bunch of different stuff.
You hungry, honey? You want to stick around for dinner? We're making pork chops and applesauce.
Let's do it. I can't wait.
Goodbye, everyone.
And Doritos.
Bye.
We'll be right back.